In February, I was able to stand on the bed of this stream, the Nailbourne, without getting my feet wet. We'd had so many years of drought, and there seemed no sign of any rain at all. Well, 1992 has changed all that. I can see the water around about 18 inches or 2 feet here, and going strong, and judging by the rain we had last night, there's plenty more to come. And the barley, which was being sown in October, well, that's at least 3 inches high now, and looking very healthy indeed. A nice bright sun shining as well. So hope for the future. Hope for the barley, and therefore, hope for next year's beer.
Good evening. The headlines from News from South East. A massive van bomb attack is averted in the West End. Flood warning for the southeast with more rain forecast.
Yes, yet again on this programme, I managed to get it completely wrong. No sooner had those optimistic words about the weather escaped my lips than it started to rain again, and it didn't leave off raining for 7 days. And it certainly wasn't Shakespeare's gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. With gale-force winds, it was more like the storm scene from King Lear. The ironic thing is that the papers are saying that the drought isn't necessarily over in Kent. That's because the ground was so hard and dry in the first place that the rainwater, when it came, ran straight off the surface, in some cases onto the roads, which made driving along the Elam Valley even dodgier than usual. The shocking weather also meant that when I made a return visit to John Aspinall's zoo park nearby at Port Lym to check on the year's new arrivals, there wasn't a lot to be seen. Mums and offspring were prudently staying indoors.
Well, if I could see it, what would I be seeing?
Well, you'd be seeing Indian tigers here, and we're very lucky that we've actually had some more cubs born at the end of August, which is a great success, obviously. And one of our major successes, of course, is the Przewalski horse, the wild horse from Chinese Mongolia, which, of course, are extinct in the wild. And we've actually had 22 births here at Port Lym this year. And the very exciting news, of course, is that we've actually sent 10 of them back to China only a couple of weeks ago. But apart from the horses, of course, we've actually had over at Howlett's just yesterday our 51st gorilla baby born, which was great. And a couple of weeks before that, our 50th. So we're doing well in the gorilla stakes as well. And more recently here at Port Lym, we've had small cats like Caracal, some maned wolves, and over at Howlett's a bongo as well.
What's a bongo?
A bongo is a very pretty antelope from Africa, and that was born about a month ago. So, you know, there are lots of babies at both Howlett's and Port Lym.
Well, at this point, the heavens opened once again, so I restored Sue to her nice dry office and made for home. As I drove up the valley, an empty signpost reminded me of one animal who won't be complaining about wet weather. Every spring, there's a warning triangle with a picture of a toad fixed to that post to warn motorists that these little chaps, and of course these little girls, will be crossing in large numbers to their breeding pond. Apparently one Canadian visitor this year was impressed by this thoughtfulness, but he got it slightly the wrong way round. How handy, he said, to warn a guy that he might be going to skid on some toads. Well, I suppose it does work both ways. Talking of animals, I'm reminded of all the ones I meant to talk about, but haven't during the year. At one point I remember promising a report from horseback. It never happened. The reason for this was called Coca-Cola, and she was one of the best-looking horses I've ever had. Like her rider, she did tend to get slightly out of breath at times, but this was no problem. My days of travelling at high speed on horseback are definitely over. Unfortunately, she was also a victim of string halt, which, without being too technical about it, means that one of her legs was liable to give way suddenly without warning. This tends to land the unwary rider flat on his back from time to time, which isn't so bad if it's on grass, but not too terrific on tarmac. So, 3 falls and a couple of broken ribs, my ribs, later, the beauteous beast was regretfully returned to her former owner. So much for horseback reporting. The TV news that evening brought tidings which seemed to worry some people almost as much as the flood warnings. The almost boundless duty-free allowances for drink from the continent, mainly France, of course, due to start in January, were, it seems, poised to threaten the newly revived English wine trade. The person to ask about this was obviously Peter Warden at the Elam Valley Vineyard, just up the road.
It's a serious business, and the situation is much worse, actually, than you mentioned, because although HM Customs and Excise are apparently putting about stories like 10 litres or 100 litres or whatever, the Commission is absolutely convinced that there is no restriction whatsoever. The quantities are totally unlimited, with the proviso that they are for the private use rather than private consumption, for the private use of the individual making the purchase. In another EEC country, of duty paid wine in that country. The duty paid in France is a matter of a few centimes. And so we can, in theory, and we are in fact going to in practice, take our wine into France, have somebody pay duty on it in France, and then it's available to re-export to England, but only in the custody of the purchaser. You can't do this by remote control. This is another classic example of bureaucratic craziness and the British enthusiasm and very highly developed skill for shooting themselves in the foot.
With possibly unpleasant prospects and with the rain still lashing down outside, it was soothing to listen to the 1992 vintage poppling away gently in its vat. If you listen carefully, you can just hear it.
Yes, a sound to fill any vigneron's heart with joy, and any customs and excise rummager's heart with avarice.
With that thought, and a glass or two inside me, I went back home in fairly merry mood, and I found the village newsletter, which has all the news about Elam, which is fit to print, and some which isn't, found it on the doormat. Idly leafing through it, I suddenly uttered a not particularly muffled oath and scurried breathlessly to next door but one to catch my friend, Parish Councillor Derek Borton. He was just getting into the bath, but this was no time for trifling.
I want a word with you.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I have here in my hand a copy of the Elam newsletter.
Yes.
It contains the proceedings of the Parish Council.
That's right. You
will no doubt see. And about four items down, I'll read what it says. It says, Twinning. A positive response had been received from neighbouring councils to this council's suggestion for a twinning link between the Elam Valley and an area in France. It was agreed that the next step should be the formation of a committee to develop the project further. Can you tell me anything about this? You were present at the meeting, I take it.
I was present at the meeting. I'm not sure that I can tell you much, Michael. Except I think that you are in line to be the chairman and convener and etc.
That's what I was very much afraid of,
Have
Derek.
You not had any communication?
As a matter of fact, no. The first I knew of it was reading it in the village newsletter.
It's bad when it happens that way.
Yes. Can you tell me what was said at the meeting?
We'd been in touch with Barham and with Liminge and I think Kingston, and I think that all of them were moderately interested at any rate, yes. So that it looks as though it's a possibility, provided we've got the man to set the whole thing in motion.
Well, I tell you what I will do. I will convey this news, which is actually, let's face it, very good news, because it's not indifference. I will convey this news to my opposite number in France, Madame Chèvre, and well, it looks as if we may be set on a course that I'd little thought would come about.
Could be, yes.
Yes, well, if this idea of twinning the Elam Valley with the Valley of the Course in northern France, which I started so rashly in June, was to take off, it was vital to get in touch with Claudie Chèvre, the female stick of dynamite at the French end of the project. At any other time, it would have been nice to pop over in person and interview Claudie, but the boundless duty-free isn't due, after all, until January, and the weather was still doing its thing, so I settled for the telephone.
Hello, Claudie. I have some news for you. You remember that we spoke in the summer about making twinning between our valley and your valley? Well, our parish council has sat and decided that they want to go on with it, and they've even gone as far as wanting to appoint a committee to go on with the affair. What do you think?
Oh, I gladly realize that good sense is hers, because we are to join our forces in between neighbors.
And what sort of things do you think we should start with, Claudie?
Oh, culture, pédagogique, tourism, gastronomy.
Oh, gastronomy above all, yes.
Oh, gastronomy.
Being Claudie, of course, she was actually way ahead of me, and she'd already set up her own committee or working party, a working party of young people, including Stéphanie Milon.
We spoke together with Claudie and my friends, and we think it's a very good idea.
So are you going to come and see us in the Elam Valley?
Yes, it could be very good to see you and visit your valley and see what we can do together.
Well, I look forward to seeing you in my valley, and I look forward to revisiting your valley.
Yes.
And we must do that very soon in the new year. Meanwhile, I have to say goodbye and Happy New Year to everyone in the Valley of the Course. Bye-bye.
From us, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from Elam Valley.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Well, 1993 looks like being pretty busy for Stéphanie and for me. The next thing to do seemed to be to convey this news to Derek. His cottage was deserted, but I thought I knew where I could find him. As I approached the newly refurbished King's Arms pub, glittering in all its fresh paint and gold lettering, there was a sound of revelry by night.
Why, this horse, he has an eye like a snake, a neck like a drake, a bum like a skunk, a foot like a cat, a tail like a rat. Why, like the wind he'll go. Like the wind, you'll blow!
Yet another horse was about to enter my life, or rather re-enter it. The Hooden horse, the magic pagan emblem of Kent, was an animal I had met before.
A very frightening-looking white horse. He's going round amongst the spectators, snapping his white jaws at them, and he's accompanied by a man with a bag, asking for money.
That particular horse was with the Morris men in May, celebrating, as pagans, Christians, and quite a lot of religions do, the rebirth of life after the winter. The Morris men in December in the King's Arms with their horse were, like many the world over, paying homage to the winter solstice, although with so many rude jokes flying about, you might not have realized that it was any kind of religious observance at all. As a matter of fact, it's actually quite serious. The horse must die before it can be reborn. Sometimes it's the rider who dies.
Oh, your rider's fallen on his head.
I fear he might be slightly dead. Oh, I don't know, though. There might be something I can do by swiftly cleaning up his flu. Here he is, a washing doctor.
As I've said, with all the jesting and the drinking, there is a serious reason behind all this horseplay. Just as serious, if a lot less decorous, as the proceedings in St. Mary's Church just across the way. Which reminds me that, yet again, I've found no time to tell you about the church, of which we're all rather proud. So instead, let me leave this year as we began it, with the bells of Elam Church, wishing you the very best possible 1993.